late in the game. It was critical. I mean, he made some great shots. There's no doubt about it. But Siva did too, man. Siva had a few plays in there when the game was going back into Louisville's direction. I think Michigan had led 46-42, and Siva took over a little bit and was really he just got the ball in the hoop. I thought the game was kind of like a full court. I thought somebody, either on the TV or the radio, I was trying to listen to y'all's hookup with whatever network you have, because I thought Raftery and John Thompson were much the better analyst of the games that I listened to this weekend and last night than Quinn Buckner, with Nance calling it, and Steve Kerr sitting there. I guess, I don't know what he did, but he didn't say very much.
You mean Kellogg? Yeah.
Who did I say?
You said Quinn Buckner.
I meant Kellogg. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I'm not a Kellogg fan, and I agree with you. I think Kerr has some moments, but he doesn't talk much. You're right. I mean,
he doesn't talk much.
Yeah.
The Dial Global play-by-play guy, Kevin Kubler, is really good.
No, I think the broadcast is very good.
I couldn't remember his name, but I do know this. People either like or don't like Bill Raftery, but I thought he and Thompson, if you got to listen to y'all's, listen to it on the bus while, you know, you're watching it, kind of like a lot of people do the Razorback broadcast sometimes.
Right.
It was much better analysis of the ball game. And I thought both people probably noted that it was like a full court street game in a way.
It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was entertaining for sure. I mean, we talked about some of the issues with the officials I had. I mean, I thought they missed a few, you know, calls, but I thought it was both ways. But the one thing they did right, the one thing they overall as a theme got right, was these are two teams that they really let play. And for a fan's, you know, standpoint, especially someone like me who didn't have a dog in the fight, it was really entertaining to watch because there weren't a lot of stoppages.
No. In fact, I'm really surprised. Speaking of stoppages, I'm really surprised about. I'm not surprised that John Boeheline or Boeheline, whichever, you know, who's the guy, Gumbel. He called him Boeheline once and Boeheline next.
He's thinking about boating season.
Yeah, he didn't know his timeout his team foul situation, and admitted it in the press conference. But you know, it's also kind of a bench situation. Your assistant should also know it.
That's right.
And also note it. And there's a big scoreboard overhead, I think, at the Georgia Dome. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe at the end, but you know, the players probably also know, hey, you know what? We've only got 4 team fouls. We need to start hacking them now.
Yeah, 70,000 people in the Dome knew, and millions of people watching at home knew, and the fact that he didn't know, like I said earlier, I mean, that's unforgivable. In that situation, you have to know that. That's insane.
It cost them several possessions. I mean, how many possessions could you've got?
At least a couple. I mean,
30.
That's safe. Yeah.
Who on the bench is supposed to also communicate that to the head coach? Because there's somebody on the bench that's right next to him that's keeping track of this stuff.
One of their 4 assistants. Because he actually, remember at halftime when they went inside the locker room, he asked one of the guys I don't remember what the question was. It was like how many rebounds or how many assists or how many whatevers it was. And the guy's like, X. And I'm like, okay. That guy's on top of that stat nerd guy. Stat nerd guy's on staff. Stat nerd guy needs to let him know, coach, there's only 14 fouls. You might want to catch some.
Every coaching staff has stat nerd guy. Mm-hmm. There's one of us everywhere.
Well, and he was so there's some game like the Indiana game earlier in the year where he was caught with no timeouts, and they lost it at home. I think Indiana was down 7 and beat them. I think it was the last regular season game of the year, actually. This time he's got all his second half timeouts with 5 minutes or so to go, and I think he called one. But I mean, there were stretches there in the second half that I thought, man, his team needs just a mental and physical blow, and he's got the timeouts, and Patino's already down to only 2 left. I mean, clearly the coach that was the winner between the two is Patino.
Yeah.
I thought he made all the right calls. His team, you didn't see Bahamian, you know, go out and try to shoot a 25-footer. I mean, you know, he's in there doing all the grunt work inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hardaway didn't play that well. He made an awesome dunk. There's no doubt about it.
That was nice.
But two straight critical possessions down the court. The first one, he shoots like a 23-footer real early in the shot clock.
Yep.
And he bricked it. And
well,
he made a
bucket the time before, and it's like, I'm feeling it. It was like a heat check. It's like, guess what? You're still not there.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm just going to shoot it.
Yeah.
And then he came down and shot the shot that really is more of his shot on the baseline. He missed that. And then the block call on the foul call on Trey Burke came at a really critical. You talk about officiating when it's not good.
Yep.
You just don't want a call like that maybe when it's a 3-point game and, you know, and only a couple minutes left.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for them because that was a huge momentum shift without a doubt. It was a wrong call, and it's unfortunate. But that's, you know, I think it was a little bit anticipatory. I figured he was going to go down and smash him, you know, after the situation he was in, but he didn't. He just made a great block. As far as Siva goes, Jim, back to him, and I just can't heap enough praise on this kid. He's the guy, if I could model my game after, he's the guy you want to play like. Love his intensity, gets up in your guts on defense. He just is a great he pushes the tempo, but he's never out of control, if that makes any sense. I just love the way this kid plays. He's the kind of guy, and I love the relentlessness, I guess, is the point. I don't know if you saw the parody of the Mike Rice incident on Saturday Night Live this weekend.
I actually saw it this morning on the internet.
In one of the scenes, Melissa McCarthy, is that her name? She has a deal where she throws a toaster at one of her players. And I'm thinking, if you threw a toaster at Siva's head, he'd still keep coming at you. I honestly believe that. He is relentless, man.
He is relentless. He was relentless in the second half. He's what Arkansas fans saw pretty much with the Corey back and that kind of player. And that's what Arkansas needs to be in the talk, you know, of even making a Sweet 16 again. Can you believe it's been 17 years since Arkansas last made, let's not even talk Final Fours anymore. It's the last time Arkansas made it to the second week of the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And Arkansas needs a relentless type guard and a strong front line. I think they're going to have that. But the guard situation has to be addressed and probably should have been addressed by now by the current coaching staff. I love that Louisville was able to win with guys, but you and I see guards probably not as good as Siva and Russ Smith, but in the Sun Belt, you have a lot more 6-foot guards that probably fall under the SEC recruiting radar because they're 6-foot. But here's two guys. Steve is barely 6 foot. He's probably maybe 5'11". You know, Russ Smith is maybe a little over 6 foot. But, I mean, they're so quick. I mean, the quickness for them is what shot them up to the level of being recruited, you know, by Louisville. But it's fun to see the game. Everybody just says, oh, you got to recruit 6'4" guards now or that kind of thing. It's just great to see 6 foot guards again still be as dominant as those guys were for 6 games of the tournament.
Jim, we could probably spend the whole time on this. I'm going to shift gears, though. For those who missed it, a little programming note again. The Razorbacks game, understanding the fact there's going to be inclement weather tomorrow, they are going to play a doubleheader today at 3:05, and then that will follow by the second game today. So you're going to see for Arkansas, Tyler Wright, and then Colin Pochet is going to pitch in the second half of the doubleheader today. At least that was the scheduled situation, and that's the way it's worked so far. So I would expect that against a New Mexico team that offensively could be somewhat of a challenge for Arkansas, the 10th-ranked team in all the land.
Is this are they like the basketball team under Steve Alford? Are they real – have a great record, but they're really haven't played anybody?
I was gonna say, if by that you mean they're going to get to the postseason and lose in the first game, maybe. But I do know that they've offensively they're like a top 10 team as far as average goes or something, I think I read.
Well, I like the way Colin Pochet's pitched in those midweek games.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's certainly knocking on the door to be the fourth of those great aces. I think Tyler Wright pitched some of the game here in Little Rock or North Little Rock at Dickie Stevens, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good one. So, you know, the pitching's there. We just got to get a little more consistency in the hitting that they kind of left them at Alabama on Sunday against a pitcher that's really on a roll, by the way.
Yeah. Well, and when it rains, it pours defensively for Arkansas, too. We've talked about this. This has been something it's been an issue all year, and it continues to rear its ugly head at the worst times. And when they get one, it seems like it's infectious, and they had five the other day against Alabama in the shutout loss.
Yeah, they don't get one error. They get them in bunches.
Yeah.
In a game. They either get a bunch of errors or they have a great fielding game.
To me, that could be the undoing for the Razorback baseball team, and not necessarily is the offense, because they're built to win low-scoring games with that great pitching staff. Yeah. But you've got to make the plays. Every play that comes at you, if you're playing 3-2 games, 4-3 games, you know, the one or two errors you make that lead to a run or actually might just lead to an extra at-bat for your opponent once you get to the last inning, that could be the difference in a win and a loss. So they've got to make all those plays. They're just not built to overcome a lot of errors, I don't think.
Yeah, they've got guys who are hitting the ball really well that may be suspect in the field. That's the fact. And, you know, they don't necessarily want to take all his bats or a couple of those bats out of the lineup. I think he's going with offense in certain places over there. I mean, they've still got a couple of low 200 hitters in the lineup, too. But,
yeah,
it's still going with, you know, you got to have a little offense or, you know, Sunday being the exception. I mean, they did pile some runs up in Tuscaloosa. That was a good series win. And look what South Carolina's done. You know, Arkansas went into South Carolina and swept that series. And since then, South Carolina's been awfully strong, as we figured they were. They also have problems. Their shortstop last year and this year at South Carolina is an error machine, but they overcome it. So we'll see.
Well, then for Arkansas,
LSU's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, in Fayetteville, 6:35, 6:05, 1:05. And again, I'm assuming the weather will cooperate this weekend. But Arkansas, with a great challenge against the number one team in the West, a top five team. They're like 30-2. They've had a great year so far. No big surprise. That's what LSU does. They're great at baseball. So we'll sure look more into that. Before we run out of time, I do want to ask you about the Masters. It is just such a busy week. We've got Arkansas Derby on Saturday. We've got the Masters this week. Day at the Masters over at the First Tee of Central Arkansas on Thursday, where we're going to be broadcasting live and going to be playing in the Par 3 tournament out there. So I'm looking forward to being part of that this year. But, Jim, I'm going to give you a few scenarios, and you tell me who you'd take. Tiger or the field?
I'd still take the field. Mods would be probably 75%.
What about
right.
Tiger or Rory?
Tiger will beat Rory.
What about Tiger or Rory plus Bubba?
Oh, you mean taking those three?
No, I'm saying if you took Tiger, or would you take Rory and Bubba together?
Tiger is going to outdo both of them. Bubba probably will come into this one and, you know, miss the cut.
You think?
After winning.
Yeah.
It's happened before.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably true.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Bubba's probably, you know, still reveling in last year's green jacket. It'd be great to see him up there again. Tiger obviously has improved in so many aspects of his game, and he's making his putting's back. At least it seemed like it's been back in some of these tournaments he's won, and that's going to be the key this week.
Did you see Bubba's press conference today?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, he got very emotional. He was talking about, and of course, he's an emotional guy anyway. Asked about last year's win, and he was talking about taking the green jacket, going home, and wrapping his son up in it, and all this stuff. And he was bawling like a baby up there. It was a great press conference. It was compelling TV. So if you get a chance to catch the highlights of it, you need to definitely check it out. But it was some raw emotion by Bubba today. Tiger Woods, a 5-2 favorite. Rory McIlroy is the second favorite, 8-1. Phil Mickelson is the third favorite at 10-1. What do you think about Phil? There's a guy that's almost forgotten.
Well, the way the course has changed over the last 10 years, it's built more to favor him. I mean, with his high fade, which is for everybody, for right hand, it's what's also built to favor Bubba being a left-hander too. But hitting high draws if you're a right-hander is what works there coming into the greens, on a lot of the greens. So you've got Phil being able to hit high. I mean, you know, hit the fade, which is going to be higher anyway, softer and higher coming in. The course has been built more for left-handers. Your favorite golfer, Mike Weir.
He's my favorite Canadian.
your favorite Canadian. Obviously started this, lefty streak. Who are some of the other left-handers? Maybe we should.
Well, here's what's interesting.
They're in the field. Maybe we should look at them.
You want to talk about shocking? And for me, it is at least. And I don't know anything about odds making, but Phil Mickelson's a 10-1, right? He's a third favorite in this thing.
Yeah.
Then you got Justin Rose, Carlos Schwarzer, Dustin Johnson, Lee Westwood, Louis Oosthuizen, Adam Scott, Brant Snedeker, Keegan Bradley. Those guys, Scott, Snedeker, and Bradley are 28-1. Then Bubba Watson's next at 33-1. This is the defending champion behind all the other guys I mentioned as far as the odds go.
Yeah. Well, I guess because really you just don't see the performance from him lately. But I wouldn't mind putting a 10 spot on him to repeat.
That's what I'm saying.
Those odds, I would put a 10 spot on Keegan. I think he can putt those greens.
My queer is 500-1, by the way.
Well, his game's just gone.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it kills me, Jim, is there is something about this course, though, that it guys who play well there, for whatever reason. And we say that with other courses, too, of course.
Well, that's why I'd look at a guy like Hoosty.
Yeah, well, like Fred Couples is always, it seems like, in it for the first day or two.
Sure.
Can't keep it up, but.
Tiger should be there. I mean, there's no doubt Tiger should be in the running, and if he's leading after the third round, it's going to be hard to beat him. There's no doubt.
I would tend to agree. You going to be at First Tee Wednesday? Thursday?
Really? I'll see you Thursday.
That'll be good. I look forward to that.
At First Tee. I hope everybody will look at that. Don't forget there's that event at night. What are tickets? $50?
I need to find that information, to be honest with you. Corey, if you can email me that, if you're listening, please let me know.
I believe tickets are $50, but it's a great event. It's Day at the Masters. It's the evening where you watch the tournament on TV, and they have sandwiches and all that, just like you're at the Masters, and great items for auction, and it's just a great moneymaker for the First Tee. I think it's just fantastic. I think First Tee is fantastic for the kids. I like it myself, too. It's open for everybody to play. Everybody ought to check it out. They have great family and individual membership deals. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be here.
Excellent commercial.
I love the club.
No, it is. It's great. I know it's good for the whole family. I know Scott's had a lot of good days out there, too. So it is. It's a great thing. I'm actually trying to get Maddox, once we get done with soccer, we're going to head out there and spend some time
there.
Yeah,
we'll have a little father-son deal or something.
I don't know how that's going to be fair, but that's fine. Since you're better than I am, and Scott's going to be way better than Maddox.
I don't know about that after seeing you destroy a lotion.
You know me, Jim. I'm good for about half a round, just like I'm good for about half a show. So, unfortunately, we just finished the first half of this show, so that means the last hour and a half could be rough.
Yeah, we're on the backslide now.
That's it.
It's all you, Phil. You got a shoulder.
He's calling for the righty from the pen.
That's it. Jim, appreciate it. I'll see you Thursday, my man.
Thanks. See you guys.
Jim Harris of Sporting Life Arkansas. Check him out online, sportinglifearkansas.com. And